of the Pack podcast.
The thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay. Or just go to their website at TicketKing.com. Again, that's at TicketKing.com.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to Pulse of the Pack. It has been quite some time. But I can promise you now, the long gaps between shows are over, because as we speak today, the Green Bay Packers are moving into St. Norbert College dorms, and they start meetings and such tomorrow with the first official training camp practice on Tuesday. I am Jacob Wetzendorf, your host, and it really comes at a perfect time. My baseball season ended Friday night. 26-0, undefeated champions for the fourth year in a row. Very proud of my kids. For that reason, did really well on Friday night. So that was a fun way to end my season. And now football season starts up. So it really is perfect timing for me. It's hotter than the hubs of hell here in Rockford, Illinois. It's actually, it feels like 108 degrees. So, Jason, I almost feel like I moved to the desert. And as I say that, joined with me as always is Jason Perrone in Minnesota. Jason, how's life?
Life is fine. I was actually just back in Arizona last week visiting family, so I got reacclimated to the dry heat, and yeah, it's warm. It's warm and humid here, but that's summertime. You got to soak it up, because I guess once November rolls around, everybody starts getting sad again. So, but yeah, I mean, it's exciting. You know what, Jacob? Congrats on a great season for your team. That's awesome. Undefeated. It's kind of hard to beat. And there's so many different milestones that football fans have to get through in order for it to be focused on football time. You got to get past hockey season, and you got to get past basketball season. You got to get past like the first part of the baseball season. So yes, I would have to say officially, without a doubt, it's definitely focused on football time. Very excited to be talking some Packers. As a matter of fact, I just popped on Twitter right before we got on. And I noticed that some of the guys are actually already starting to check into their dorms at St. Norbert College, which is the longtime training camp spot for the Packers. So that's exciting. I know we're going to talk about that. But before we jump into anything, I just want to mention real quickly, lots of prayers, love, and support go out to my colleague Adam Check, who continues his battle against cancer and actually is taking some steps, I guess you could say. He's gotten some okay results, that things have kind of stabilized a little bit. He's still got quite a battle ahead of him. But this Friday, he's going to be in New York City attempting to get a surgical procedure that he was not able to have earlier this year to hopefully get all of the visible cancer out. And then he would hopefully be then deemed disease-free for at least a period of time. So thoughts and prayers out to Adam and his family and his lovely wife, Julie, and thinking about them. And let's talk some Packers football.
Absolutely. Adam, if you're listening, keep kicking cancer's ass. We appreciate everything that you do for our site and everything you are as a friend in the limited time that I've had an interaction with you, at least. Jason, you mentioned we also have a special guest with us today, and by far the best-looking person we've ever had on this show. Michelle Bruton is with us tonight. Michelle, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can. Michelle, welcome to the show. How is everything? It's been a while since we've talked. I think the last time we talked was just before free agency, and we made some really horrible Matt Forte puns.
Yes, we sure did, and they've been following me around like a specter on Twitter ever since. I'm doing very well. It's a severe thunderstorm here right now in Chicago. So hopefully I don't lose power or anything like that. But yeah, agreed with you guys. It's too hot and too humid. I'm actually looking forward to crisp fall football weather.
Absolutely. And then with you living in Chicago, does that mean it's still kind of baseball season because you're a Cubs fan, or are you not a Cubs fan?
I'm not a Cubs fan. I'm from New England originally, so I am a Red
gross.
Sox, Celtics.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, I love Chicago though, as much as I might hate their sports team. So it's exciting at least to see people here excited. I mean, they've waited a really long time to be good. So.
Well, since you're a Red Sox fan, then we will not be talking baseball on today's show because I root for the team in the Bronx. Things are not going so well for us these days. But we can all agree on the Green Bay Packers, and that is where I want to start. 2 weeks from today, the NFL Hall of Fame game will be played in Canton, Ohio, between the Green Bay Packers and the Indianapolis Colts. Some guy named Brett Favre is going into the Hall of Fame. It should be a fun weekend. If you're a Packers fan, I look forward to viewing that stuff every year, even more so this year, because one of the guys I got to watch play a lot of his career is going into the Hall of Fame. So very exciting stuff there. But the big story on the field, of course, is that training camp starts. The Packers will have meetings and such tomorrow and practice on Tuesday. Michelle, we didn't have you on the show. The last time we were here, we were talking about the Al Jazeera report. Apparently, the NFL is going to interview Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers tomorrow or Tuesday, one of the two. Basically, we just want to gloss over here, see if you got any extra added opinion here, but is this a big deal?
You know, I don't think it's a big deal in the sense that I think there'll be actually any sort of punishment or retribution sought. I think all this boils down to, I kind of really come down on the side of the NFLPA here, and that I don't find Al Jazeera to be the most reputable news organization out there. And it boggles my mind that the collective bargaining agreement allows the league to punish players, even if there's just evidence that they use performance-enhancing drugs, if they don't even have to have failed a drug test or anything like that. Which is a little bit scary to me. I think that really infringes on the players' rights and seems like it could be a little bit of like a witch hunt type situation. So I would hope that all that comes out of these interviews is just that this Al Jazeera report isn't credible enough to really lead to any sort of seeking of punishment. I think that, you know, once we start letting the media dictate suspensions with absence of any hard physical evidence, that's a little bit of a scary time in sports.
Absolutely. Is it almost like Bud Selig's witch hunt that he put on a couple years ago in baseball?
Mm-hmm.
Jason, anything to add here?
Well, we talked about this last time. The only thing I want to add, there was an interesting article in MMQB by Tim Rowan earlier this week, I think midweek, that I read. I don't know if either of you guys had a chance. And Michelle, thanks for coming back on too. It talked about the kind of the anatomy of a disciplinary hearing with Roger Goodell, which I don't think this is the type of scenario where Goodell's going to have these guys come meet with him eventually. I think the league is investigating it. I don't think he's going to be involved personally or intimately. But it was interesting because one of the things I took away from it was the absolute power that Goodell has. After reading it, I was already kind of on the side of the players' union in that I don't think it's a great idea to have one person be judge, jury, and executioner. And after reading this particular piece, I'm even more of that mindset. And so he has made an example of players before where he may not have necessarily thought they deserved punishment, but he handed it out because of the look, the stain that it put on the shield, which I used in terms of obviously representing the NFL, the logo and the brand. And so you never know with Goodell kind of at the wheel totally in those situations what's going to happen, but this just, I mean, every time I hear more about it, it seems weaker and weaker, so I think it's much ado about nothing, but with Goodell involved, there's always that Joker card in the deck.
That's probably the best way I can describe it, Jason. Joker card in the deck. I agree with both of you guys. I don't think much will come out of this other than just, you know, maybe in the court of public opinion, and it might stain Peppers and Matthews' career in the eyes of some, but, you know, like Michelle said, I'm not so sure that Al Jazeera is the most credible news source that exists. But that's enough about the off-field stuff. Let's go on the field. Training camp. With training camp always comes storylines. One of the big ones from this offseason is new faces and new places, and I want to start with the coaching staff. And, you know, the biggest story from last year to this year is that the Packers do have a wide receivers coach once again. His name is Luke Getsy. last season was kind of a disaster at the receiver position. I think that that has been talked ad nauseum since the season ended, really since the season was going on. But the Packers receivers did not play well last season, and I think that some of that has to do with the absence of Jordy Nelson. I think others have to do with, you know, how much impact that was made by not having a coach there to kind of help guide them through some stuff. But, Michelle, let's start with you here. How much do you think the presence of a receivers coach this year, can that impact guys like Davante Adams and Jeff Janis and Jared Everdeen? We know Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb can play. But those younger guys really haven't proven a whole lot at the NFL level. Can he help bring some of those young guys around so the Packers can have more weapons than just a two-man band?
Yeah, you know, can I make a really bold statement right now? I actually think naming Luke Getsy wide receivers coach might be the one thing the Packers did this offseason, and I'm including in that signing Jared Cook, drafting anyone they've drafted, doing anything they've done in terms of personnel. I think appointing a designated wide receivers coach could be the biggest and best thing they did this offseason to help affect the product on the field this year. I think you're totally right in that last year was just frankly a disaster. And I think a huge, huge part of that is that these young, pivotal wide receivers entering really important parts of their young career didn't have the kind of instruction and coaching and development that they needed. And, you know, we talk about how great the Packers are at developing young wide receivers, but, you know, at a certain point, McCarthy is doing other things and Ted Thompson selects them, but he sure doesn't develop them. And so you really need someone whose sole purpose on that team is to bring out the talent that these guys have, make sure they know the playbook. I mean, it was apparent last year that these guys, for whatever reason, just did not even know the playbook. I mean, they wouldn't run the right routes. They would stop short. They were just having communication problems. Rodgers clearly expected them to be somewhere they weren't. So I think this is going to make a huge, huge difference for players like Davante Adams or Ty Montgomery or I don't know if Aberdare is on the roster. We'll get to that later. But Jeff Janis, you know, people like that who just, for whatever reason, kind of have the raw talent that you need but aren't really being developed at the level they need to be to find success at this level.
Jason, what are your thoughts on having a receivers coach? We talked last season about how cluster expletive is kind of one of the ways we describe the Packers route running. I mean, there was no spacing. There was no continuity. Watching Davante Adams run a dig route last season would make Mike Holmgren turn over in his grave, even though he doesn't have one of those yet. But, I mean, what do you think the Packers will do this season having a guy in there to, like Michelle said, help develop some of these younger guys into hopefully better football players?
Jacob, never, ever, ever do that again, man. I thought I missed a huge memo about Mike Holmgren. I'm freaking me out. So,
I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm back. I'm okay now. Everything's fine. No, I agree with a lot of what Michelle said. I pretty much share those sentiments. My only thing to add to that would be just, you know, look at the output that the Packers got from the receiver position when, like, Jimmy Robinson was their position coach. I think the bond, the camaraderie, the group kind of mentality that they have, they all feed off of each other. You know, it all snowballs when you've got somebody over that particular group. When you feel like you're shared, you know, that sense of leadership just isn't there as much. So, yeah, I mean, would be great to see that group, because they've got a lot of talent, get back to, you know, I don't know if we can ask for 2011. I mean, that was an outstanding group of guys that also happened to include a Greg Jennings in his prime and a Jermichael Finley in his prime and a younger Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb, who was a rookie at that point, you know. But even getting back to the 2014 level would be outstanding. So obviously Mike McCarthy sees the value in making sure every position group has a leader. They've made several changes, and Michelle, that's I guess it's a bold prediction at this point, but I couldn't be more hopeful that it's true. Because if it is, given how the Packers offense, you know, what the heart of that offense is, it's obviously the passing game. That's going to do great things for the offense this season. So would be exciting. Great move putting somebody over those guys.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one thing that happened last season was, you know, the Packers, I think, just kind of took the position for granted because wide receivers for years and years really have been so good. You know, you think back to kind of the last years of Favre, you know, there was a year where Antonio Chapman was the number two wide receiver. That's really the last time the Packers have been inept at the receiver position. I think they thought so highly of Devontae Adams. I think that they thought so highly of some of the younger guys coming in. I think they thought Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb obviously would help those guys along. And then because of that, they could afford to not have a position coach, and it clearly affected the team last season. I mean, you could see that. I mean, the Packers' best receiver last season was James Jones, and nothing against James Jones. All he does is catch touchdowns. But James Jones is an older player and was brought in to be a role player. He should not be the team's best wide receiver throughout the course of a season. Let's stick with the wide receivers here, actually, because that really is the position battle to pay attention to the most, because really it's Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and then a really big cluster between who could be the third wide receiver. I mean, there are reports that Devontae Adams could finish this offseason as high as the starting second outside wide receiver to potentially not on the team. So the first question I have, and, you know, Jason, you and I have talked about this before, but, Michelle, can the Packers really afford to keep seven wide receivers?
No. That is my short answer. I know that that's been a really popular topic this offseason, and people have pointed to other teams who have kept seven. But it's such a luxury, and there are so many other places on the roster that you could use. The defensive backs come to mind. You know, when you're getting down to final cuts, the difference between one or two extra guys at each position becomes really vital. And I think the Packers have what's honestly a really good problem to have, which is that they might really have seven guys that they want to keep around. That's a good problem to have. I mean, it's hard as a personnel person to have to make those decisions, but it's better than having four guys and having to fill out a roster of five or six. So I don't think they can keep seven. I don't think it makes sense. I don't think financially or, you know, numbers-wise in terms of the breakdown of the 53, it makes sense. That being said, I think the thought that they might only be able to get away with keeping six means that there's going to be a really healthy, productive competition at the position in training camp. And I think that we might see that push some of the guys who I think are on the bubble, like Jared Aberderis, for instance, really kind of step up and show what they can do once and for all. So I think that's actually going to be really exciting to watch this training camp, just seeing these receivers proving that they deserve to be one of those six spots that I presume the team will allocate to the position.
Okay, so I think we're all in agreement that keeping seven wide receivers is more of a luxury than an actual need. But looking at kind of the composition of the position group, I think that you kind of started to hit on a point there. I really do think the Packers are going to keep six wide receivers. You talk about it, Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb are locks to make the roster. You figure Ty Montgomery was a third-round pick. He's in his second year. He's not going anywhere. Jeff Janis is a special teams ace. I have a really hard time believing that the Packers would cut him. And I still feel that Devontae Adams can be a productive player in the NFL. So that's five guys right there. They drafted Trevor Davis in the fifth round. I got a hard time seeing Ted Thompson cutting a fifth-round pick because he's basically just saying, I wasted a pick. And guys with Trevor Davis's speed don't make the practice squad. That's just not how the NFL works because you can't teach the way that that guy runs. And then you got Jared Aberderis, who's been up and down, but, you know, he's had some nice moments as a receiver when he's gotten a shot to play. So, Jason, what do you think here? The Packers really have what looks like seven guys for six spots. What becomes of Jared Aberderis here? Because he seems to be the one with the least amount, quote-unquote, of raw talent.
Well, I look to the comments that have been made during the offseason about Aberderis to try to give us some clues as to how valuable the team still sees him. Mike McCarthy keeps some pretty high praise on him in terms of the mechanics of his route running, which is something that McCarthy really likes in a player. And then you've got, obviously, the support that he has and the, I don't want to say huge chemistry because he hasn't spent much time on the field, but with Aaron Rodgers, I agree with Michelle. I don't think they're going to keep seven. If Aberderis happens to be the guy that's the odd man out, this might be one of those situations where we may want to keep an eye on the comments that Rodgers makes. If he's let go, this seems like one of those situations where we might hear some passive-aggressive, underhanded, you know, comments from Rodgers about how he may not necessarily have disagreed with the move, but the way you just broke it down, Jacob, makes sense. I am of the ilk that the, and this is obviously the more negative Nancy side of the equation, but I think that injury is probably going to end up deciding how this whole thing shakes out. And the linchpin of that conversation in terms of health is Ty Montgomery. I just don't know. He might be recovering and on his way to getting back on the field finally after that, you know, horrible ankle injury that I don't think any of us realized how severe it was that he suffered prior to not even halfway through his rookie year. And I just kept hearing, even after the season was over, he's still in a walking boot. He's still in a walking boot. So it's not past me, and it wouldn't surprise me if he gets out there and he's just not as far along as he thought, or if he has another setback, then, you know, that may end up solving all the world's problems right there. If he either can't play, which is the worst case scenario, and I hope that's not the case, but may have to start the season on the pup, physically unable, or maybe, you know, second to worst case scenario is he's the IR designated to return guy. If he's not ready to come back, because the Packers are going to have to make decisions in terms of, you know, he may be ready to go before that, but they got to do other things with their roster. So, but there's too many needs in other areas, so they definitely won't keep seven. But that's my prediction. My prediction is I think that health is going to end up. You know, we don't know if any other injuries are going to pop up during camp or during the preseason, but that's how I think this whole thing is going to get decided. So, you know, the coaching staff in you know, not in a way that they want to, but may get bailed out in that sense.
And unfortunately, that probably will be the case. It seems like health is always a deciding factor when it comes to battles like this one. And like I said, this is the most intriguing battle, in my opinion, for the Packers this training camp. And it'll be a nice thing to watch in preseason games because realistically, you know, from the naked eye standpoint, during a game, it's really hard to tell, you know, how a battle's going at a linebacker spot or on the defensive line or on the offensive line. At the receivers, you can see who's catching the ball, who's making plays, stuff like that. That'll be an interesting storyline to watch in the preseason. And as that goes forward, I don't know if you guys have heard, but there's a player who didn't play last season, and he's coming back. And his name is Jordy Nelson. Being the Star Wars nerd that I am, this season has been dubbed The Return of the Jordy, which is fantastic. I love every single part of that because – who am I kidding? I'm a Star Wars nut, so I can't even pretend to hide that. There's my inner nerd, so if you guys want to make fun of me on Twitter, go ahead. I'm fine with that. I understand it's nerdy, and I do not care. But this season is the return of the Jordy, and, you know, the question I have is, are the expectations that he has for this season coming in a little too high? I mean, there are people saying that he could come in and eclipse 1,500 yards receiving. He could catch over 100 balls, a lot of deep balls, stuff like that. And, you know, the other thing about him, though, is an ACL tear, while this isn't the death knell it was 15 years ago, a lot of people forget that, you know, a lot of people really aren't the same after the ACL injury until 18 months later. Well, as of August 22nd, or somewhere around that time frame, I don't remember the exact date, but I know it was late August, it'll be a 12-month, full-year recovery period for Jordy Nelson. But are the expectations, Michelle, are they too high? Are we expecting too much of Jordy Nelson that we'll just be able to plug and go?
You know, I don't know that we are expecting too much. I think we're expecting him to get back to kind of his old form. And so I don't know that that's necessarily 2014 form when he had over 1,500 yards and like something like 13 touchdowns. But certainly I think we're expecting him to get back to, you know, 1,200, 1,300 yards, low or high single-digit or low double-digit touchdowns. I think he hasn't done anything so far in his training to prove to us that we should expect to see a different Jordy on the field as a result of his injury. I do think, however, that if Jordy Nelson has 1,500, 1,550 yards, there's something wrong with the offense because I don't know that the Packers' offense necessarily is built anymore for someone like Jordy Nelson to have over 1,500 yards. Certainly it would be great if that's effective and that's working, but given all of the weapons surrounding Rodgers with and given, I think, what we saw last year, which was a little bit of a move away from their kind of typical isolation spread offense as a necessity because Jordy was gone, and to more of it. You know, I would really like to see them get more successful in the short to intermediate game, in the seam with Jared Cook. And I think that if Jordy is open and he's not in double coverage and Rodgers can get to him downfield for 30, 40 yards, that's awesome. But I don't think the Packers necessarily need that for Jordy to have a successful year. I think Jordy could get 1,100 yards and still have a fantastic year in which he really helps the team just by virtue of being on the field, being a downfield option, drawing defenders downfield so that Rodgers can maybe find more success short to intermediate. So I think that I don't think we should be disappointed if Nelson comes back and doesn't have 1,500 yards and 10 touchdowns. I think that he's still going to help this offense out so much just by virtue of being back on the field.
Agreed. Actually, I think it was a week ago now, I was on Railbird Central with Brian Caribou, and he asked me who was going to lead the team in receptions this season, and I went with Randall Cobb for that reason. I think that Jordy will draw defenders away. You know, he'll help the other guys, Cobb, Adams, Montgomery, Janice, Cook, et cetera. Some of those guys like that. You know, one other big battle that we're talking about with training camp, it kind of involves one of your guys, Michelle. That's John Crockett, the running back position. And obviously, Eddie Lacy's got his issues from last season that hopefully he's over. We'll find out more information on that this week. James Starks is back, obviously. But the Packers kind of surprised some people by not drafting a scat back, pass-catching type running back to be their third down guy. You know, one guy I really liked, for example, was Paul Perkins. So my question that comes off of that is, you know, John Crockett is a guy you wrote a story on last year, I remember, and he's one of your favorites. And, you know, the question is, can he be an answer to the team's third down running back issues? And if not, do you think we'll see more of Randall Cobb / Ty Montgomery on the backfield on passing downs?
I do love John Crockett. I've loved him since the combine. He was so under the radar at the combine. He was one of the top running backs in the vertical jump and the broad jump, and he had a 4.62 40, which is crazy, and he just kind of flew under the radar. So I've really been high on him, and I know that at a certain point, college or combine production has to translate into NFL production. I don't think he's really been given a chance yet to show what he can do in the NFL. And I think what really excites me about him is that he is so different than Eddie Lacy and James Starks. He brings something so different to the field. I think that instead of the kind of like power run style that Lacy and Starks use, Crockett shows you that he has a really good burst. I think he's fast enough to, if he does catch the ball on third down, he can actually break away from defenders down the field and actually make something of that. So I think he's someone who, if you're building a roster, you keep him on with the halfbacks because of what he does to complement your other players. You know, he does add something different. He does add a new dimension, which kind of makes your overall game that much more deadly. The one thing I worry about with Crockett is I do think to really solidify that roster spot, he needs to make an impact on special teams. He really didn't do coverage very much at North Dakota State. He also didn't do a lot of returns, although given that they have other players on the roster, quite a few now that they've added over the last couple of years who can do that, I don't think Crockett necessarily has to, but I do think he needs to be able to participate in coverage. But if he can, that's kind of his challenge, I think, in training camp. And if he can prove that he's even passable on special teams, I absolutely think he's deserving of that third halfback spot.
Michelle, as always, it's a pleasure. Hopefully we can have you back on a game week. We've had you on a couple off-season shows. I'd love to hear breakdown of a game. That time is coming very close, but we appreciate you for coming on. Tell us where we can find you, where we can find your stuff. I'm sure hopefully you get a blitz of Twitter followers after this, but tell us where we can find you.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, underscore NFL, and I currently am writing a weekly column for Cheesehead TV, and actually just recently I found out that this fall with Bleacher Report I'll be running the Packers team stream on their team stream app. So Lots of kind of little nuggets there and lots of stuff I'll be sharing on game day and not game days as well. So I'm really excited about that, and hopefully that's something that fans look forward to reading in the weeks once we start the season.
Well, Michelle, as somebody that is on Team Stream, some of my stories have actually appeared on there as well. So if you have any pull, kind of push mine to the front if you can. But
I'll see what I can do.
That's awesome to hear. Great opportunity for you and well-deserved. Michelle, thanks for having you. Thanks for having us. We appreciate having you and hope to talk to you once the season begins.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys.
That is Michelle Bruton of Cheesehead TV / Bleacher Report, and as she told you, some other stuff as well. Great insight from her, as always. Jason, I want to pick back up where we left off with her. We were on the running back side of things, and the question I have for you is kind of the last one I asked. Will we see more of Montgomery and Cobb in the backfield? Is that maybe their plan for pass-catching backs? I think with the lack of a proven third running back and the plethora of wide receivers that the Packers think they have, I think that that could be an option, is either moving Cobb back there and Montgomery in the slot or vice versa. What do you think the Packers do with their receivers / running backs when it comes to catching passes?
They won't abandon using Cobb and Montgomery in the backfield. If you follow me at all on Twitter, remember last season, I was not a fan of that at all. It's not because I don't think they're effective. It's because it's too predictable. When they're in the backfield, something is happening. It's not a decoy. It's never, you know, to throw defenses off, and it didn't seem to throw defenses off, although the Packers had plenty of their own offensive problems last season that extended well beyond that. So, yes, you will see – the short answer is we will see – Cobb in the backfield for sure, Montgomery if he's healthy. But I would like to see – my only ask of that is, you know, the other issue I have is that I don't want either of them to get hurt doing something that's not their primary responsibility. I think they can be valuable. I just don't – I've never been a huge fan of it because I've never seen it pay major dividends. I mean, I think on a couple of occasions they had Randall Cobb in the backfield on a third down and medium to long range yardage and, of course, got the ball. Cobb got the ball and he was stuffed, and it was because it was obvious that that was happening. So those are kind of my issues with it. I would just hope that the play calling is a little bit more creative, so defenses have to honor what else is going on in the field. And maybe the addition of Nelson back out there is a factor. If Adams steps up and has a better season and he's more of a threat, you know, defenses are obviously going to have to spread the wealth in terms of what they're going to cover, and that's only going to open things up for someone who's dynamic like Cobb. But overall, not a huge fan of it. But, I mean, I can be had if I see it having success, because we'll definitely see some instances of it for sure this year.
Well, Jason, my response to that would be is you didn't watch the Patriots game that we were at, and I know that's not true, and you didn't watch the Seahawks game last year, because the Cobra package where they threw Cobb in the backfield get the offense back in a rhythm. Now, I don't know if it should necessarily be in every series, every third down kind of thing, but I do like it as a wrinkle. And like I said, I think with the way the Packers are set up with their wide receivers this year and their lack of running backs, that could be something that the Packers look to. And I think that, you know, maybe they gave us a clue as to what they're thinking with not drafting a guy like Paul Perkins or another running back of sorts, but we'll see how that goes. For those of you that check out Milwaukee Journal, there's a story that came out about the tight ends. Something I read that was pretty interesting was from Bob McGinn, and I know Bob McGinn can kind of get some Packers fans to roll their eyes, but in this case, it's info, he's plugged in, he's got it. The thing that he said was that Richard Rodgers appears to be the team's number one tight end. Aaron Nagler, the godfather of Cheesehead TV, seems to think when they go one tight end that Rodgers will get the nod over Cook more often than not. My simple question, Jason, is, are you buying that?
And, Jacob, I have to apologize. For some reason, the audio cut out during part of what you were saying, so I only caught a little portion of it. So can you repeat?
They're saying that Bob McGinn is saying Richard Rodgers appears to be the number one tight end. Aaron Nagler seems to think that when they go one tight, it'll be Rodgers getting the nod more so than Cook. My question was, do you buy that?
Okay. Yeah, that was an interesting topic and wonder. If we're talking about right out of the gate, maybe, depends on how quickly Cook heals from his foot surgery and integrates himself into the offense. So they might just go conservative like they tend to do with the guy that they know that knows the offense. But I think as the season wears on and Cook gets more comfortable, if he's healthy and is effective in picking up the offense, then he's going to probably assume that role relatively fast, because he's had a lot of comparisons to, and he's not the same player as, but the effectiveness he can have might match somewhat that of what JerMichael Finley's was when he was at his peak in the offense. So I might buy it for the first couple games, but it's not going to be a long-standing thing if Jared Cook is what he was signed to be. And you have to think that because of how infrequently Ted Thompson signs that type of player, that they already have a pretty good idea that Cook can be that player, barring something unforeseen like an injury that they can't necessarily prevent. So, I mean, it's kind of a waffle answer there, but in the long run, no, not a chance. It's got to be Jared Cook if he's healthy.
I'll say this. One, that better not be true, because we kind of saw what that looks like last season with Richard Rodgers as the go-to tight end. Two, that better not be true beyond this season either, because, you know, Jared Cook's on a one-year deal. I anticipate that, you know, if he has a good year, he'll cash in somewhere else this offseason. And I've talked about this draft class for tight ends. Had this draft class come in this year as early entries, it's a little different for the tight end situation this year. But next year's draft class, Jake Butt out of Michigan, O.J. Howard out of Alabama, Jordan Leggett out of Clemson, there's guys in that class that I think can make an instant impact in the Packers offense and be an instant upgrade to Richard Rodgers. So that better not be true, that they are planning on him being the starter this season and several seasons ahead. The guy's big. He doesn't block well. He doesn't move well. Like, I think Richard Rodgers is a good red zone target, and that's it. And that's fine to have as your number two tight end. But you signed Jared Cook trying to get a little more dynamic down the field. I've often said, since my days of really the first install of Pulse of the Pack and then continued over it from the benches, if you have a tight end in this league with a passing league and a throwing quarterback, your tight end has to be dynamic, able to move, catch the ball, work in space, get yards after the catch, stuff like that. Richard Rodgers has proven, at least in my theory, that he can't do that. Jared Cook at least has a chance to do that. I would be very upset, to put it lightly, if Richard Rodgers was the starting tight end both this season and in the seasons beyond. But that is my opinion on the tight end position. Let's move to the defensive side of the ball. And obviously, it's the same position we've been talking about for years, inside linebacker. My first question, Jason, are we putting too much pressure on a fourth-round rookie? Is Blake Martinez going to be ready to be the dime linebacker when the season opens? He's taken almost all the reps with the starters due to Sam Barrington's injury. Jake Ryan reportedly has bulked up, but you hear that about just about everybody in the offseason. What do we make of the inside linebacker spot this year? Because Clay Matthews is not going to play there this year.
It's probably going to be, yeah, it's going to be one of the fourth rounders. So, I mean, for a fourth rounder to play that position because it's a part-time spot, I don't think it's asking too much, and I think both players will get an idea of what kind of football IQ and intelligence Martinez has now that we're going to start seeing some training camp updates, and then when they start playing preseason games, we'll actually get to see him out there live. I know Jake Ryan has the intelligence to know where to be, and I think with familiarity, he's physically, you know, his physical and athletic abilities are maxed out. They are what they are, but hopefully the intelligence factor can help him earn a step or two just by simply being in the right place sooner. So I don't think so. I think it'll be an upgrade over what we saw from Joe Thomas. And to me, Joe Thomas was like a big defensive back more than a linebacker out there. And he was okay. He did okay. But I think in that position, and as much as the Packers like to shift into the dime, I would be more comfortable with Ryan or even Martinez not knowing anything about him than what they had last year, just simply because you want to be able to blanket those receivers over the middle and make some bigger impacts. You know, you're the only linebacker out there. Obviously, the emphasis is on the defensive backs and covering all the receivers, and there's a lot of them if they're in that particular defense. So, you know, they're not going to be big maulers and they're not going to have huge stats, but I'm fine with it. I think they'll be okay. I think they've, you know, like I said, they before when we were talking about Jared Cook and the fact that, you know, the Packers bring guys in that they know can fit well in their scheme, and I'm going to trust that the scouting team did their homework here and they've got a good idea that Martinez can do it. They already know what Jake Ryan can do. So if they're sticking with it, then there's probably good reason for it. I think they'll be okay. Martinez might be a little bit lofty expectations for him as a rookie just because we don't know anything about him yet. Jake Ryan, absolutely not. If it has to be him going into week one, I'm totally comfortable with that.
See, here's the thing. Jake Ryan's a Michigan guy. I've talked about that before. And how I want him to succeed because of that. Jake Ryan's one of the, like, three players I got to root for in the Brady Hoke era because Michigan didn't have a lot of good players, so I feel a little extra connection with him. It's really him and Devin Funchess along with Denard Robinson, even though Denard Robinson's more of a Rich Rodriguez guy. But I digress. This isn't a Michigan football show. But nonetheless, I want Jake Ryan to succeed. But the one thing I can't get out of my head is last year I was at the Vikings game, the last game of the season, and they got Jake Ryan isolated on Jerick McKinnon and had Teddy Bridgewater put the ball on McKinnon. It was like a 70-yard touchdown, and he left Ryan in the dust. So my thought with that is I don't know if that guy's going to be a coverage guy. I'm not sure if he's a two-down guy, a three-down guy. Obviously, we'll see more this season. He did do some nice things last year, but I'm looking for a little more athleticism, and I think that, you know, we kind of took for granted how good Clay Matthews has been in the middle of the last couple of years. The Packers haven't had a guy like that in the middle really ever. So I'm wondering what can the Packers do at that position? And it really is really being thrust upon Blake Martinez to be good. The Packers need a dime linebacker. Nothing against Joe Thomas, but watching him try and rush the passer is about the equivalent of trying to watch me do that on a blitz, which isn't good, by the way. I'm a 25-year-old fat guy that hasn't played football in about 10 years. Well, maybe not that long, but just about. So the Packers need Blake Martinez to step up. Whether that's above Sam Barrington or Jake Ryan, I don't know. I know that Mike Daniels is a big supporter of Sam Barrington. He says he's a guy that, quote, starts a riot, and Mike Daniels wants guys like that on the defense. He's talked about that for damn near 3 years, I think. But, you know, I just don't know if Barrington's athletic enough to be that guy. And then he's coming back off of a foot injury, so that may affect the speed that he already didn't have much of to begin with. So, again, a big question mark going into this offseason is the Packers' linebacking core. One thing that is not a question mark, at least in my opinion, is the defensive backs. In the base, you figure the starting defensive backs are Sam Shields, Demaryius Randle, HaHa Quinton Dix, and Morgan Burnett. Then you go beyond those guys. You've got Quentin Rollins. You've got Ladarius Gunter, who's reportedly made strides this offseason. Micah Hyde is still there. Packers have some guys in the defensive backfield. This might be a good and deep group this offseason. Jason, how in love with this group are you? The answer from me is I am more in love with this group than I am with Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm. And for those of you that don't know who that is, look her up. Rocker chick, what's not to love? But Jason, take it away.
Well, I will be looking her up because I am not familiar with her, so I will definitely do that. I've got some homework coming off of this show. I mean, as far as the defensive back group, I'll spare you my comparison of who compares to the defensive back group because I am also pretty enamored with them, on paper at least. I mean, I expect Randle and Rollins to take a huge step forward in season two. I think everybody keeps talking about Quentin Rollins and how much they expect from him, but I think that's also a lot of hope speaking, too, because Casey Hayward is gone now, and there's going to be more needed from Quentin Rollins with everything shuffling around. And so, yes, you expect to make a huge step forward, but he's a little bit more of a question mark. I think Demaryius Randle could really turn on the Jets this season, and all of a sudden you've got HaHa Quinton Dix, like you said, Jacob, who's going to he has a chance this year to kind of turn the corner and really become one of the star safeties in the league if he's going to make another jump from year two to year three like he did from year one to year two. Now you've got those two guys. Don't forget Sam Shields, who still 7-8 years into his career can run down anybody. He's the fastest guy on the team. So, well, maybe not with Trevor Davis on the roster now, but, you know, he's stable there. And then you've got Morgan Burnett, who plays the run better than most safeties in the league. I think they got it covered. I mean, that's one of the things that can kind of cover up some of the warts that you might have up front, your front seven, and with some of the new faces on the defensive line and the loss of Raji, that might actually end up becoming a need, is for the defensive backs to be able to kind of hold coverage a little bit longer, kind of make up for any loss of productivity up front, maybe while Dayton Jones is learning his elephant end position, for example. You know, Mike Daniels is fighting off double teams every snap, those types of things. But you need, these guys are going to be a huge piece of the success the defense is going to have and the Packers are going to have overall, because they haven't – since Dom Capers took over in 09, I think the Packers have the second most – well, they might actually have the most, but if it's not the first most, it's the second most interceptions by defensive backs since Capers took over. So, I mean, that's kind of how they work their defense. They kind of prey on and they live by those takeaways from the secondary. So, and I think it'll continue. Clinton Dix had a great playoff series. You know, he had a nice interception there. Marius Randle had some really nice plays. Quentin Rollins had the two pick game against the Rams. The ability is there. So I think this is going to be a lot of fun to watch when the Packers are on the defensive side of the ball. And it kind of reminds me of like 2010. I mean, I'm using two Super Bowl seasons, so it's, you know, they're obviously, that's cherry picking, obviously, but those years were years where, you know, as much as you like watching your team on offense, because that's typically when you score points, it was actually fun to also watch the defense, because you're like, you know what, they got this. They got this totally covered. And you felt confident and you were excited about how they were going to defend a third and long or a third and short versus like, oh, how are they going to, you know, this isn't going to work. This is going to fall apart. You know, so I think this is going to be one of those seasons where we're going to get treated to a lot of fun watching both sides of the ball. And it's going to, a lot of that on defense is going to be because of the secondary.
Absolutely agree. And one thing I want to get out of the way right now, I think Ha Ha Clinton Dix is a candidate to be the defensive player of the year this year. There were some tweets in the offseason from some really smart NFL people that said he was just a couple splash plays away from being in that conversation. This kid is going to be a star, I think. And I think this is the first year that he really breaks out. When it comes to the defensive backs, one other thing I can add, and since our guy John Rahor is listening, and I know he is because he sent me a bunch of pictures and such, when it comes to the DBs, get your peanut butter ready. Let's move to the front seven. Defensive line, outside linebackers, and let's start up front. You know, obviously, B.J. Raji retired. You mentioned that. LaTroy Guyon was brought back. And as far as experienced guys, it really is LaTroy Guyon and Mike Daniels, and that's it. At the beginning of the season, they brought Kenny Clark in as a first-round draft pick. Rockford, Illinois' own Dean Lowry was also brought in. Those guys are going to have to play well early is what I'm gathering based on who's on the roster. How much can we realistically expect from those guys, Jason? Because those are rookies. Kenny Clark is very young. That's been discussed a lot. He's 20. He'll be, I believe the number is he'll have played four NFL games before he can legally have a beer. So that means he's 20 years old, and he will be until at least a quarter of the way into the season. Dean Lowry, intriguing body type, very athletic, but a fourth-round pick. And, again, that's another guy you're asking a lot of that was a mid-round pick. How much can we expect from those guys up front? Because, really, you know, I've talked about this before. Last playoff season, the Packers' defensive line was very good. During the playoffs, and that really helps the defense play well because they made the opposing offense one-dimensional. They were playing on the other side of the line of scrimmage. LaTroy Guyon and B.J. Raji were terrors. Mike Daniels was his usual self. I think that was really the biggest key to the Packers' defense playing as well as it did in the playoffs. Now you're talking about no Raji, and, you know, you're really a rolled ankle from, knock on wood, but you're a rolled ankle from Mike Daniels or LaTroy Guyon away from maybe having two rookies in the starting lineup. So, Jason, what do you think about the defensive line? Because in my opinion, this is even a bigger concern for me right now than the inside linebacker spot.
Well, I mean, if you can't have a beer, then you're not tough enough. So, Kenny Clark, turn 21, please. I mean, he's a first-round pick, so – he's a rookie, and, you know, in a perfect world, you don't want to place too much on rookies, but if there's an exception to that rule, it would definitely be your first-round pick. So I think we need to expect as much as we possibly can from Kenny Clark. He's going to learn really quickly. When you're picked that high, you have to come in and contribute right away. And he's clearly not going to be a special teams player at his size and stature, so that means he is going to be counted on as a regular part of the defense. So Kenny Clark, he needs to come in and he needs to play well. Do we need him to be DJ Raji? No. And the comparisons will happen, but we need to establish what kind of player he is and what he brings to the table. No two guys are alike. I think LaTroy Guyon is going to anchor down in the nose to start the season, and then they'll work out a rotation. I think it, as far as Lowry, need to see him in some game action because I don't know much about him, and we'll start hearing and seeing the recaps with when the Packers do their one-on-one drills and how many times is he winning his battles. You know, if he's going to be going up against any of the starting offensive linemen and he's going to win some of those battles in training camp, then I'm going to be encouraged because all of the offensive linemen on the Packers' current roster are not slouches. So that would be one way to gauge it. And then if he's doing well in preseason games and he's playing at all with the first team, which I don't think will happen, then, or at least not right away, that's another good sign. But he's a fourth rounder too. I mean, you got Lowry, you got Blake Martinez. I would put more high. I'd put higher expectations on Martinez. I don't think Lowry's going to necessarily be as much of a contributor, but as the season wears on, the key to this group may not necessarily be how much they contribute, but how well they rotate. Because, like you said, Jacob, the defensive line played well in the playoffs. Well, in order for that to happen, these guys have to be fresh. They've got to be on fresh legs. It would be nice to get a bye week coming into the playoffs as well, which means the Packers would need to secure either the first or second seed, and that means that have a good season and be successful. But with a bunch of new faces, they're going to have to work on some sort of a rotation that's going to keep these guys fresh for later in the season because those big guys get worn down, they get tired, and when they're needed most is late in the season. In January, when they're playing football, teams run more, there's a lot more asked of the defensive line, and that's when they've already got 16 games worth of wear and tear on them. With the early bye week, there's another reason why. This, you know, I think it's going to come down to rotation on the defensive line. So hopefully both of them are capable because with the, you know, if you look at the guys who are in the mix, those are going to be two important players. Otherwise they're going to be counting on some undrafted guys who may step up. And hey, we've seen it happen before. Mike Pennell is a perfect example. If one comes through, that's the best case scenario for the Packers. But when you're undrafted, that's a huge wild card. It's kind of hard to determine. So I think with Clark, the sky's the limit. Throw him out there, and he's got to produce. He's a first-round pick. Hopefully they chose wisely. And then with Lowry, fingers crossed that maybe he can overachieve a little bit.
Yeah, that's definitely something. Whenever I've gone to training camp, I try and set myself up where I can see the offensive line versus defensive line one-on-ones when they put the pads on. I think that's very entertaining. You know, one of my first training camp memories is Dayton Jones just destroying people in his first training camp, and then he had an ankle injury that kind of hampered him, and obviously he's never quite lived up to what I thought as soon as I saw this kid, I'm like, this guy is going, and he wasn't just beating your training camp fodder. I mean, we're talking about Josh Sitton and guys like that. I mean, he's beating studs, and he obviously hasn't lived up to that, which is unfortunate. But I love watching offensive line versus defensive line one-on-ones. That's my favorite part of training camp is the one-on-one battles because that's when some guys kind of make their names. Early in camp, later in camp, you can kind of see who's got it and who doesn't, those kinds of things. And I mentioned Dayton Jones.
That means let's move to the edge. Obviously, the big storyline in the offseason is two guys are moving to the outside. Clay Matthews is moving back out there. And Dayton Jones is also moving out there. The Packers really have some intriguing players at the outside linebacker spot. As today stands, you know, obviously your starters in name are going to be Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers. Other guys on the roster they have, Dayton Jones, Nick Perry, Jayron Elliott, and third-round pick Kyler Fackrell will also be in the mix to maybe get some snaps there. Mike Neal is not there any longer. The Packers are trying to ramp up their pass rush. I just watched Super Bowl 50 again today. They had an NFL replay on, and this is really what happens when I don't have baseball or something like that to do. I watch old football games that are on TV, and I happened to watch this one today. But that Denver pass rush was definitely a factor. You know, that's been discussed a ton since the Super Bowl ended. Really one big reason for moving Matthews back outside, despite not really having a proven answer in the middle. Jason, my question, I mean, somebody's got to emerge, because you would imagine with Julius Peppers advancing in age, Clay Matthews, you know, they like to keep him fresh. Who's going to be the guy out of that group of four that I mentioned, Fackrell, Jones, Perry, and Elliott? Who's going to be the guy? And they've got about, I think the number's around like 900 snaps to replace for Mike Neal. That's a lot of snaps. He took the most snaps at linebacker last year for a guy not named Clay Matthews. So I don't know if they thought that highly of Neal or what the case was there, but, I mean, that's a lot of snaps to replace. Who's the guy that's going to take the majority of those, in your opinion?
Well, give me Nick Perry of all the choices that you listed, because the more snaps you give Nick Perry, the more chances are he's going to make an impact play. And I've said before, he makes those impact plays in bunches. He's in a contract year. Packers didn't pick up his option, so hopefully he's a little pissed off. And as a defensive player and a linebacker, I think you're okay with that. You kind of want that. So if best case scenario, you know, if I had to pick one, it would be Nick Perry. I think it's going to end up being a combination, though, of Perry and Elliott. And I hope this season, whatever riddle or mystery it is as to why Jerron Elliott didn't see more of the field last season, gets solved. Because, you know, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if somebody's got some dirt on him, or maybe there's something we don't know about him that happens behind closed doors. But after that Seattle game, which, Jacob, you were in the house for, you saw it up close and personal. I don't see how that player isn't more of a part of the story of the 2015 Green Bay Packers defense. So hopefully, if only for the fact that Neal's gone and they need to put somebody else out there, and Perry has a history of missing time, so he's probably going to miss a couple games if I'm just going off the averages. Hopefully he can prove us wrong and actually suit up for 16 games for the first time ever. Then, you know, they're going to need Elliott. So I think it'll be Perry, Elliott. But I know one of the things we're going to talk about as far as rookies that we're most excited for on this team, and I looked through the whole class, and you know, obviously I think the highest expectations might possibly be on Blake Martinez because of what he's expected to do. But I'm going to be watching Kyler Fackrell, because he's a tall guy, and I want to see how he uses his leverage and how he uses that length to get to the quarterback, and how well he does in a game situation, because he's a little bit older. I think he's in his mid-20s. He's obviously the Packers scout well. That's Ted Thompson's bread and butter. He doesn't do the free agency, so you have to think that there's definitely a reason why he was chosen as high as the third round. So give me Kyler Fackrell, because if he can kind of be what we've been talking about some of these rookies doing in contributing in a third rounder, that's right on the bubble of yes, we need to see something from you, and okay, maybe we can wait a year. He's definitely going to have to be a special teams contributor, but I'm hoping that Fackrell is part of the equation, because that right there, I'm telling you right now, if Elliott and Perry are effective and Kyler Fackrell can also come in and give the defense a boost and he can play meaningful snaps, then, you know, I think that all over keeps everybody in their natural positions, and maybe what that'll allow, which some people don't want to hear because everybody's been very excited about the idea of Clay Matthews moving back outside, but let's be realistic. It works when he's inside sometimes, and there is success to be had in there in terms of Matthews getting to the quarterback. You know, you can now disguise Clay Matthews. You can put him in places where the offense doesn't know what he's going to do. Confusing quarterbacks. Is he coming up the middle? Is he dropping into coverage? I mean, he can cover. You know, I know it's Jay Cutler. Everybody's picked off Jay Cutler. Jacob, I think you had an interception on Jay Cutler last season, but, you know, he picked him off last year. So it's only going to benefit the defense overall if they can get some productivity from Fackrell. But I think it's going to be Perry or Perry and Jerron Elliott, and that sounds good to me. Very excited about it. I think more so with Elliott because, like I said, after Seattle, I'd like to see if you give him regular snaps throughout the season, what kind of numbers he's putting up by the 14th through 17th week of the year.
It is funny because his teammates call him Shakespeare because all he does is make plays. Speaking of Jayrone Elliott here, of course, Jay Elliott is responsible for the happiest I've ever been and the most scared I was that I was going to get in trouble after working a game because I was fist pumping and really trying to hide my emotion after beating the Seahawks, but it was not feasible. His interception and his forced fumble to end the game was the happiest I was last season. Now, unfortunately, that was in week two of the regular season, but I'm staying on the train for my answer for this. Daytone Jones. I think Jones is going – Jones's best games as a Packer have come when he's played some on the edge. His best game last season, he played primarily on the edge against the Minnesota Vikings. Two sacks, making plays in the backfield. I just think there's something there that the Packers haven't quite figured out yet. Daytone Jones hasn't quite figured it out yet. I'm really hoping this is the year that he does that, but that's the guy I'm going with. The other guy I'd go with is Nick Perry because NFP. At some point, this guy's either going to put it all together or I'm just going to be disappointed. You know, 10 years from now, I'll probably still be talking about some of the plays Nick Perry made early in his career and how just he never really was able to fully put it together. But that's another guy I'm sticking with him. I think on a prove-it type contract, he can prove himself to potentially be a starter for the Packers next season because they are going to be replacing Julius Peppers next year. I can't get that training camp out of my head for Daytone Jones. I really think this is going to be a good year for him. So that is my thought on the outside linebacker spot. Jason, you mentioned rookies. That's one of the first things that everybody wants to talk about when training camp starts is what rookie do you have your eye on the most? I'm cheating. My answer is two guys. I just said my biggest concern is the defensive line. I know the Packers only play two defensive linemen at a time, and more often than not, one of those guys is going to be Mike Daniels. But I still think that they need some guys. I think those guys that I have my eyes on are Kenny Clark and Dean Lowry. I think the Packers need some impact out of at least one of those guys, and obviously both would be a great thing as well. But those guys are the ones I'm watching. I want to see more from Kenny Clark. You know, what did they see in him in the draft? Obviously, I watched some college tape, but it is a little different playing in the NFL. And Dean Lowry's from my hometown, so it didn't matter if he was an undrafted rookie. That was going to be the guy I had my eyes on. Like I've mentioned on the show before, I've watched him play in high school. I'm really hopeful for him. By all accounts, from everyone I know around here, he's a really nice kid, really hard worker. I really hope this pays off for him. And I really do. I mean, if you look at it, 6'6", 295, he really does have a chance to be that five technique that the Packers really haven't had a prototype for that position since Dom Capers has been here. Now, I know a lot of people point to Colin Jenkins, but that guy wasn't a prototype. He was taller than Mike Daniels, but he kind of did some of the same things. You know, he was disruptive and he was very good, but he's not the prototype for a 3-4 defensive end the way you're thinking like that. So I'm looking at the two defensive linemen. Jason, what do you got your eyes on when training camp opens up?
So I mentioned Tyler Fackrell, because he's kind of the one draft pick that I don't know as much about, but he's got an opportunity to really be a springboard for the defense for the reasons that I mentioned. We were talking about Jayrone Elliott and Nick Perry and the linebacker position as a whole. So that would definitely be one of them. And then I think, you know, the low-hanging fruit and the easy answer is, does Kenny Clark do what a first-round pick should do coming in? And given the huge piece that's missing now with Raji being gone, is he going to be able to step right in and contribute right away? Because you got to keep a rotation up front. When you're running a 3-4, these are big guys. You got to keep them fresh. You got to limit those snaps. And it just wears on and on and on. And that early bye week just gives me a migraine every time I think about it, because we saw what happened. 2013 was an anomaly, obviously, with Aaron Rodgers getting hurt, and that's the worst-case scenario for any team to lose their quarterback. But when it's Aaron Rodgers, that's even triple, four, five times fold in the case of the Packers. So they were facing other issues as well, but the early bye certainly doesn't help, because then you can't rest a guy an additional week. You had a guy like Randall Cobb that got hurt early in the season, so then he missed a bunch of games and didn't come back until week 17, although if you listen to our intro you know that that season ended okay, and Randall Cobb and Aaron Rodgers are both a huge part of the reason why. Little spoiler alert, there may be some updates to our intro coming very soon, so pay attention for some different audio. And on that note, Jacob, before I forget, and I know that you want to mention it as well, we have a little bit of a change in terms of our sponsorship. So we are very gracious to Mayfield Sports Marketing and Waukesha Sports Cards for their support over the last three, four seasons and everything that they did to help build the Packers Talk Network, and definitely supporting allgbp.com, Cheesehead TV, and some of the other sites that we promote. So we want to thank them for that. But we've got a new sponsor this season, and that is Ticket King. And I'm not as familiar with them, but we're very, very appreciative of their support. And so obviously you heard them on our intro, which is a little bit of a new sound for those of you who have not heard of them before. But Ticket King is another reliable place for you to go and get your game day tickets guaranteed to be legitimate. And they've got a lot of safeguards in place there for that. So keep them in mind if you're looking to attend a Packers game, because we all know unless you have season tickets, you're not getting into a home game, or unless you're Jacob Westendorf, you're not getting into a home game. So just want to throw out a shout out there to our new sponsor, Ticket King. Thanks so much for the support. We look forward to pumping them up as the season moves along.
Absolutely agree. Actually, oddly enough, I pass Ticket King on the way from my walk to the stadium based on where I park every single time I attend a home game. So I was excited to read about that. Obviously, thank you to Waukesha Sports. Without them, my number four jersey would not be sitting in my room autographed as we speak. They've been great to us, Mayfield Sports as well, obviously. So that means this year we are going to have Ticket King of the game. So no more game balls, stuff like that, but we have a Ticket King of the game, and we will have that after every preseason, regular season, and hopefully postseason game as well. Speaking of the Hall of Fame and teams of sorts, let's go to two inductions one took place and one is about to take place. Nick Collins was inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame. Obviously, his career ended prematurely. The neck injury took place in 2011 against the Carolina Panthers following the Packers Super Bowl 45 victory. So, Jason, I just want to go very quick on Collins because the next topic should add a little more discussion to it. But what is your favorite memory of Nick Collins, aside from the obvious one, which is his pick six in Super Bowl 45? And my answer is the Packers were playing the Vikings in 2010, and it was against Brett Favre. And I've made no bones about it. As soon as Brett Favre put on the purple, I hated him for 2 years. I wanted nothing more than to beat the Minnesota Vikings, and I wanted them to win that game at Lambeau Field that season. Nick Collins had a huge interception in that game. It really turned the tide of the game. It was a diving kick over a receiver. It was a really athletic, impressive play. I loved it. It got me really excited. I jumped out of my seat, which happens often during Packers games, but in this case, even more so in this case. So mine is the pick versus Favre. The Packers ended up winning that game 28-24 over the Vikings and really kind of exercised those Favre demons. So, Jason, do you have a favorite Nick Collins?
Well, it's funny you chose that one because I was in the house for that game, and that interception is very near dear to my heart. So had it not been already taken, I probably would have picked that as my favorite Nick Collins memory. I mean, I think that type of play, actually, he made an interception that was similar to that against over Anquan Boldin in the last week of the season in 2009. It was something Collins did so well. Closed in and was able to make interceptions in weird contortionist type of ways. And he's just such a rare talent at that position and you know, someone that we were fortunate to have for not enough years, unfortunately, because of the injury, but after being spoiled by years of Leroy Butler and everything that he did at defensive back for the Packers, to have a safety as impactful as Collins, and now we've got another potential with HaHa Clinton Dix. You think about, like, the quarterback riches. I mean, this team has been pretty blessed in certain positions. They just keep giving and giving and giving. I'm going to go with the interception in week 17 to seal the victory against the Chicago Bears at Lambeau Field in 2010 to send the Packers to the playoffs, which catapulted them to a magical playoff run that culminated in bringing another Lombardi Trophy home to Green Bay. I mean, I can remember a fun pick six that he had against the Bears in the last week of the season in 2006. Yes. That he was high stepping it, and he picked off Rex Grossman, who apparently partied too hard and didn't care, could have cared less about that game. And so that's always fun to see. And he had a big one against the Detroit Lions in 2008 when they kind of struggled to get themselves going. But that was one of the years I think Nick Collins turned on the Jets and really turned into the safety that he was. But I'll go with the pick against the Bears to send him to the playoffs because, you know, obviously he was a big reason how they got into the playoffs, and he was another huge reason why they won the Super Bowl. So no surprise, it was an interception play. That's just what Nick Collins did. Not a huge guy, but so smart and so incredibly effective, and couldn't be happier for him getting in the Hall of Fame, Packers Hall of Fame.
It's amazing to think, had Nick Collins continued to play and had his career, you could be talking about Ted Thompson's first two draft picks as general manager of the Packers on a Hall of Fame trajectory. Obviously, the first one was Aaron Rodgers. I don't think there's much question, barring health, that he'll be in the Hall of Fame someday. Speaking of quarterbacks going into the Hall of Fame, there's a guy in 2 weeks, I mentioned him, number four, his name's Favre, that's how it's pronounced, Favre. Brett Favre is going into the Hall of Fame. Jason, we've talked about him. I think there's good time for nostalgia here. You know, we're just before the season's about to start. We did some of this over Thanksgiving, mentioned some of our favorite plays, favorite moments about Brett Favre. And I've really gotten more chance to think about that. I'll be in Canton in 2 weeks for that, so I'm very excited to be there for that moment. He's my childhood hero. I can't explain it any differently. Brett Favre was the man when I was a kid. You know, to me it was – when I was going to school and such, it was – you know, they knew me as the Brett Favre Packers guy. You know, I wore my Favre jersey every Monday after the Packers would win a game. I love Brett Favre. I've got – no bone to pick with him anymore. The time in Minnesota was definitely an odd time in life for me, but I'm over that, and it's time for him to take place in Canton, Ohio, one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. So what we're going to do this week and next is next week we'll be back. We'll be weekly shows as much as possible through the end of the season. Obviously, after every Packers game, we'll do that, but you know, between now and the start of the regular season, we'll be weekly as much as we can. But two this week and two next week, Jason, two of your favorite Favre memories. The first one I came up with, the first touchdown pass to Andre Rison, 59 Razor, 54 yards down the field. Andre Rison goes in for a touchdown, and this was really the moment that solidified I was going to be a Green Bay Packers fan. I have a canvas in my house of this moment. It's one of my favorite memories as a football fan, is Brett Favre taking his helmet off, holding it over his head, running off the field after throwing a touchdown pass. That's when I knew I really liked that guy. I wanted to play games and do everything that I wanted to do just like him, with the passion of a child. You know, everybody says he looks like a kid running around on the field. That really is what that epitomizes, that moment right there. The other moment I came up with is one that really, you know, everybody talks about things as far. They talk about, you know, the great moments, the touchdowns, Super Bowl rings, MVP awards. The one thing that sticks out to me is his Iron Man streak. And the one that sticks out in my head, they're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers at home. It's a chance to win the division for the first time in ages. This is when it was still the NFC Central. Yancey Thigpen drops a touchdown pass in that game. But during that game, Favre takes off and runs. He gets hit on both sides of the coin, both sides of his body here. He gets up. He's spitting up blood, coughing up blood. And the Packers call a timeout. The next play, he comes in and throws a touchdown pass. If that doesn't epitomize toughness, I don't know what does. You know, that's the steel curtain beating him from both sides, spitting up blood, giving every single thing that he has to this Packers team, and then throwing a touchdown pass on the next play to help the team win the game. So that's how I feel about Brett Favre. Those are two of my favorite moments. Jason, what are your first two?
Well, first two, there's so many that I could pick because I followed Favre closely from day one all the way through his entire career with the Packers. And it seemed like every time he did something, that became your new favorite over the previous. And there were so many of them that I have the very fortunate problem of having to sift through them all and pick a favorite. You know, I mean, we all love any of those Super Bowl 31 memories are easy. And Jacob, you mentioned those. Another one that's really easy that I'd have to say was the most impactful and the one I'll never forget was his performance against the Raiders, the a few days after his dad passed away. That was absolutely incredible. And for those of you who are so inclined, earlier this week, Jason Wilde had a chance to speak with former Packers kicker Ryan Longwell about some of his time in Green Bay, and he shared some stories that I'd never heard before about Favre. He talked about that particular week, that incident, being in Oakland, how they navigated getting him ready to play and play in the game, and some of the experiences they had during that game. So, I mean, that was a transcendent type of a performance in terms of there was no question that Brett Favre was going to be a Hall of Famer first ballot, and he proved it right, obviously. I mean, I think they debated – what did they debate it for, 14 seconds? So, you know, that would be number one, would be Oakland. But you got to kind of think back to how it all started. You know, I mean, some people say the touchdown pass to Kittrick Taylor, I mean, that was Favre's first touchdown pass as a Packer, and that springboarded him, you know, into the career that he had. I always remember the long touchdown pass to Sterling Sharp to beat the Detroit Lions, and the Packers win a playoff game for the first time since the early 80s, because it was vintage Favre. He was rolling to his left, throwing across the field, you know, hits Sharp, who's backpedaling in the end zone because the Lions suck and they don't know how to play defense still, and especially back then. And that was a huge, huge moment for the Packers, because it's like, okay, we belong. We're a good team now. And from that point forward, I think they appeared in the playoffs every season until 1999. There was a game in 99, and I'm picking too many. This will be the last one. But there was a game in 99. It was the opener against the Raiders. Charles Woodson was on the field for the Raiders in that game. His second or third year in the league, Favre throws a touchdown pass to Jeff Thomason to complete a huge comeback win for the Packers in that game, and he couldn't even finish the post-game press conference because he was so emotional and so spent from having to bring that team back and everything that he had to fight through. That was prototypical Favre right there, left it all out on the field, you know, the gunslinger, and that was an incredible comeback. So those are some of the few. I mean, I could sit and talk about him for forever. But, you know, I joke that the Packers are going to continue to honor Favre during a game every season until they win the damn game, because they didn't get it done last year against the Bears at Thanksgiving. So they're going to be honoring Brett Favre against the Dallas Cowboys, which I think is throwback weekend this year, and his induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Jacob, I'm jealous and stoked to hear the stories and see the pictures from that. It's going to be an awesome experience in Canton for you.
I'm very excited. That's 2 weeks away. Jason, like you mentioned, October 16th, I believe, is the date. The Packers are going to have Brett Favre honored again at halftime, like you said, maybe because they're just trying to honor him until they win a damn game. That night, you know, the Bears' Twitter kind of trolled the Packers on that, said that they hoped the Cowboys enjoy the party as much as they did, because the Bears beat the Packers on Thanksgiving this year when they retired his number. What else is there to say? It's Brett Favre. I mean, very excited to see him go into the Hall of Fame. Very deserving. And the biggest reason, you know, this show probably doesn't exist without Brett Favre, because I don't know if I'm a Packers fan without having to watch him play early in my childhood. So very appreciative of everything he was to the Packers in the time he was there. Very appreciative of, you know, the things he's doing now, now that he's retired, and, you know, some of the things he said and stuff like that. It was very easy to, for lack of a better phrase, fall in love with him all over again as the Packers quarterback. You know, and obviously the Packers have been very fortunate to have Aaron Rodgers the last couple of years. I don't want to feel like I'm slighting him in one bit there, but, I mean, watching, it was just something special when I was a kid, when I was watching Favre play. Like I said, when the chips were down, give me number four and I know we have a chance. He might throw six picks, but he might throw six touchdowns too, and that may have been what made Brett Favre the most entertaining player in the history of the NFL. That's going to do it for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com, Cheesehead TV, for all your latest Packers news, podcasts, articles, stuff like that. Follow the show on Twitter, at PackerPulse. Sorry, we ran out of time. We didn't get to your questions today. We are hoping we'll be able to do that next week. We had a couple weeks off, so we had a lot to cover, but we're running out of time here, so we will get to those next week, I promise. We did not ignore them. We appreciate you for sending them in and for listening to the show. Thank you to our new sponsor, Kick It King.
Again, brand new, really good place to pick up tickets in Green Bay, Wisconsin. It's not too far from the stadium at all, so it's a good place to grab your tickets before the game starts, go into the game, and root on the Pack. Training camp starts tomorrow. Practice starts Tuesday. Very excited. Football is back. I want to thank Michelle Bruton for coming onto the show. She's great to have, as always. Congratulations to her for her new opportunities. And, of course, thank you to John Rahor for your entertaining Twitter posts and pictures messages during the course of this show. I tried not to laugh hysterically throughout the show because of them, so I appreciate that, as always. Jason and I thank you guys for listening. Football season is right around the corner, guys. 2 weeks from today, the Hall of Fame game. Training camp's going. Preseason stuff. Excited for the Packers. Football is back. Thank you guys for listening. And the first one of the season, go Pack, go.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.